Errol Valentine, driving you home with the music you love today on Radio Today.
29 minutes past 3 o'clock, if you've just joined us. Very good afternoon. Welcome to the Afternoon Drive on this midweek Wednesday edition of the Afternoon Drive with it till 5 o'clock. Our guest in studio right now, who will be with us for the next 15 minutes or so, is Dr. Mark Manley. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Errol. Great to be in your studio.
Welcome to... Mm-hmm. Yeah, air-conditioned.
Hey.
Cool.
It's good
How
stuff.
How cool is that? All right, now a little bit about Dr. Mark Manley. He has been an advocate for change and leadership development ever since his involvement in the South African struggle for democracy. And since then, he's held positions of leadership in politics, business, and the ministry. Ministry, not the ministry, just ministry.
Well, yes, let's not get too fussy about that.
Yeah. Well-known radio and TV personality, has worked in over 30 countries in great demand by governments. And how am I doing?
Oh, my gosh, all right. Enough already, you know.
He's the originator of leader centrism and holds a PhD in business and education. Whew, now I can take a breath. All right, we're going to be talking for the next little while about leadership. And, I mean, it's a fascinating thing because... There is so much theory that's kicked around about leadership, and you know, some people have the answers and other people don't, and there's lots of criticism about this person's a leader and he was a born leader. Let's start at the beginning. Mm. Are leaders born or are they made?
All right. Well, first of all, the great debates around leadership is obviously so important because leadership affects every part of our lives. You can have two companies in the same street doing the same kinds of things, drawing on the same kind of labor pool, same markets, all that kind of stuff. One is excellent, the other one's mediocre. And what is the difference? Essentially leadership. So where does this leadership thing come from? And your question is a very acute one, because if we talk leadership development, which is a field of studies that has really blossomed over the last 20 years or so, a lot of people sort of deny it because why bother with developing leaders if leaders are born?
Yes.
And I remember speaking at one of the legislatures of one of the provinces in South Africa, and it was comprised of elected representatives and traditional leaders. So I posed this question to them, you know, part of the process, saying, you know, are leaders born or are they developed? And very arrogantly, the traditional guy sat back and said, "We are born." And it nearly caused the riot, you can imagine. You know?
Yeah.
And the other guys were saying, you know, we pulled ourselves up by the bootstraps out of the ghetto, and who are you to presume anything?
Yes.
So the short answer to that would in fact be, well, if a leader, if you're not born, you're not going to be here. Ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. So you have to be born in a way. But at the same time, leadership development is an imperative these days. It's like any great sportsman. Talent is not enough. So you might be given certain components that might give you an advantage in the leadership game. Mm. You might be eloquent. You might have a very good strategic or analytical brain that sets you apart in some kind of way. That's just your talent. The raw kind of stuff that has to do with the way that your brain fires up, and maybe you're pretty blessed because of your folks and your genes and that kind of thing.
There's a but.
The greatest sprinter in the world is not going to be able to sit back on pure talent and say, you know, I've got these great twitch muscles, I'm going to be able to take the gold. Mm. There's great dedication and hard work to converting that talent and maximizing it into something profound.
It puts me in mind of somebody who's running the marathon, and you would look and say, well, he's won it so many times because of his structure. He's got the right ratio of torso to leg and arm and size of cavity, all this sort of thing. But he needs to work hard and get the fitness levels up and the energy levels and diet and all of those things. It's the same kind of thing.
But it even goes beyond that. You know, the kind of things that go into, and this is part of this particular book, is to say, what is the structure of leadership? And we are looking to be able to define leadership in a way that says, I can recognize a leader and I can analyze a leader. And there are leaders surrounding us, and I know maybe their leadership is not that good, but I don't know why. And this now gives us some kind of an understanding of what the constituent or component parts of what that leader is, so that we can actually do a decent analysis, and then for ourselves, do decent development. The kind of stuff that you need to be having, communication would be one of them. But the rest of the stuff is all developed. It's stuff that can develop at a young age. And it is a lifelong process.
Well,
there's many case studies, lots of research that indicates that people that shine at a young age are not necessarily the people that are really going to crack it into the big leadership stakes for the rest of their lives. Mm. And the converse is also true. Take an Abraham Lincoln, who was an abysmal leader. When he joined the army at the, you know, in his 30s, he joined as a captain, he got commission. Because he had some land in those days, they gave you commission on the basis of who you were. After 2 years, he was a corporal. So if you understand military rankings, he was demoted about 4 or 5 times. Mm. He was an abysmal leader, and yet he turned into one of the most magnificent leaders that America's ever had, with a great courage, convictions, principles that changed history.
Listening to you, it strikes me that there is a lot of, not only in this country, I suppose in other countries as well, a lot of appointment of people to the level of incompetence. And that has always struck me as being don't they get it? Mm. Don't people understand that you need to have certain things in place before you can get to that level?
Yes.
To say to somebody you're a BE appointment, or you're an appointment because you happen to be the son of a friend of mine, or whatever it may be, and I'm not saying they're all wrong, don't get me wrong, I'm just saying there are some appointments that are beyond the level of incompetence where they just cannot cope.
Yeah. This brings in a number of different factors into how do people get in to end up in the positions that they're in. Mm. And there are two key dynamics. One of the things that I tell my clients on a regular basis is you've got to work on two areas. One is in the area of favor. You have to win favor of those that are actually going to determine your future, be it your boss or be it the board or be it whoever it is. But on the other hand, you have to develop your competence. Now, it is the mix of those two things that functions together to give you the maximum impact for your career and your eventual positioning. If you are just a great expert, high competence and all that kind of stuff, but nobody likes you, you've got no favor. All you're going to be is some kind of a strange maverick or somebody out there who's always got a little bit of, well, can we trust this person? They seem like an outsider. They haven't got our favor, but man, they really know their stuff. Mm. So it could be the person that ends up sitting in a corner as a technical expert. Or on the other hand, you get your crony who has maximum favor and no competence whatsoever, but, oh, we trust this person. Mm. They were with us in the field. Or we were at school together. Or it's my son. Even worse. And those kinds of things. So no requirement for competence, but maximum favor on the people that actually are the power brokers. And as a result of that, we end up with a lot of the misfits of people in positions of leadership that shouldn't be there. Mm. Because that's what I call... Cremora leadership. Remember the old advert? It's not inside, it's on
top.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no substance to their leadership, but it's well painted on the top.
So here's the thing now. If somebody has, let me put this the other way. Should a leader always have the skills to do the job that the minions and the people underneath him are doing? Or should he simply have the skills to be able to direct those people to do the job? The reason why I'm asking is because many, many years ago, I worked in a company where they took what was then the personnel, now the HR director, and put him in charge of IT because he was a pretty good leader, and it just fell apart. Do you need to be, as a leader, do you need to be able to do the job that you're expecting of your people?
All right. There's no short answer to that, but suffice to say this. You do need levels of complexity of thinking to be able to understand more or less what it is that you are leading. What is this process and operation? However, I do not expect Bill Gates to be a champion programmer. Mm. You don't need that level of expertise to be able to command leadership at a great level. There have been many examples of people that have moved from one field into another completely and been very successful because they understand leadership and people and not the technicality.
And they understand the concept of what they're supposed to be looking after, what they're supposed to be leading. They understand what that particular division, department, country, whatever is supposed to be doing.
And that would come down to the understanding of the complexity of it, not necessarily understanding the technology of it.
Yes.
And that makes a very big difference. Some people... their level of complexity only goes as far as their technology, and so they can't actually move across or move into another field. because they get limited or stuck in their own paradigm of where their own training and comfort zone has been. And that's why it can be sometimes disastrous. On the other hand, you get some people who've been great leaders in one particular area, they move to a completely different one, and they fly.
Yes. Also, one of the things about leadership is the ability to delegate. And I'm not sure it's one of your six rules. We'll go into those in a minute. But delegation is, for me, the vital one, where you say to somebody, I am going to grow you as an individual because I'm going to give you some responsibility. I'll watch you and we'll feedback, but I'm going to give you this opportunity to develop your own thing and grow as an individual and grow as an employee. I think a lot of leaders in business, maybe you can qualify this, tend to interfere.
Yes.
They butt in, hands in the till. Yeah. No, we don't want that. Go to your office. We'll do what we have to do.
And let me tell you, it's not only business. In all realms of society where there are leaders, there's going to be this kind of interference. I mean, just look what happens in politics, where you'll get a minister fiddling around in the operations of the civil servants and essentially stuffing it up, you know. And that's very unfortunate. On the other hand, the good leader, the excellent leader, is a person who's not only able to delegate the responsibility, but also to empower the person, to give the person power to accomplish that which they've been given to do. I have come across, very unfortunately, people who are so frustrated. And I say, what is the problem? They say, my responsibility is to deliver this project. This project is worth a couple of million to the company. But when I need a pencil, I've got to go and get a signature to get the pencil out of stores. So I have all this responsibility to deliver millions to the company, but the authority that has been delegated to me is not there. I've got responsibility, no authority. And that's one of the worst things you can do to anybody.
Let's have a look at, if you just joined us, by the way, we're talking in studio to Dr. Mark Manley. He's written a book called The Leadership, and we're talking about that exact topic, leadership. So there are six, according to your book, structural imperatives for the leadership. I won't go into the analogy about the ship and so on, but the corresponding components. Now, you've got, let's look at a couple of these. Vision is number one on your list.
It's got to be a future focus. The future has got to be better than what we got now, or better than what we had in the past. So one of the imperative things that a leader has to do is to be able to say, come, we're going to a better place. You know, and that can be psychologically, economically, geographically, politically, whatever it is, but there's got to be something better in the future that we go to. If the leader's not bringing about that, and that would then drive change, but if the leader is not bringing about that, it's not a leader, it's just a maintenance officer. So, okay, everybody, we're very comfortable right now, so I will lead you into staying right here.
Yes.
Two spoons of sugar?
Passion is your second one, the fuel that feeds the engine of progress. If you're not in business for fun or for profit, what the hell are you doing there? It might have been Peter Drucker, a guy called Peter Drucker. You remember the name from way back when?
That's right. He's got a wonderful leadership institute now, in fact.
Oh, really?
In California.
Okay.
In fact, headed up by a South African.
Okay.
There you go. And that's another whole program, but yes.
So, passion, yes.
Yes. Passion, it operates from a different part of the brain. So much of what we have to do in our leadership is logical, sequential, rational, and it can get very dry and pretty boring and that kind of stuff. However, if you are able to ignite the unreasonable emotion to create the energy to accomplish something that is against the odds, that's when you can actually make that change and energize the people sufficiently to overcome their own tiredness or their own doubts or whatever it is. That's a classic thing that you see in the movies, you know. The great leader gets in front of the troops beforehand, and what does he do? He doesn't give them the logical statistical analysis of what's going to happen. You know, can you imagine, the great general getting in front and says...
Takes his sword out, waves the flag, and says, let's go, guys.
Yeah, that's right. We're, you know, history will remember us. We've got nothing to fear but fear itself, and, you know, all those good trite things. If he got up there, or she got up there and said, you know, we've done our analysis, and one in two of you is probably going to die today.
Yes.
It's not going to work.
Bit of a doops.
You need that passion.
Communication, up, down, sideways.
Of course.
Major lacking in many organizations, many governments, many whatever.
Yeah, some of the researchers come back and said that of the Fortune 500 companies, and this was done particularly in business, that they regarded communication, external and internal, as the source of 80% of their problems. Which is
the lack of it, you mean?
Yes, well, yes. When it breaks down. Okay. Mm. So it just causes problems, mm. You know, because, you know, we don't have Bluetooth yet, mm. You know, brain-to-brain Bluetooth. Mm. Mm. So it's all about ideas that are in somebody's head, and you've got to be able to get into somebody else's head.
I didn't get the memo.
Yes. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's right, hey? It's those people in the hallowed halls of head office who are making all these plans. Mm. We down here at the sharp end of the business, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and they can be the most profound plans.
Yes.
And the most life, world-changing, history-making kind of ideas.
If you're not sharing it, what's the point?
It's not getting to the people. Yeah.
Power or influence represented by, in your analogy, turbo-boosted rockets attached to the side of the ship. But power, okay. Yes. Now, power can be very evil.
Yes, it can.
Power can be very destructive.
Yes. So let's look at this one. A lot of people are nervous about this power thing because we've all suffered from somebody who abuses power. And so it makes us a little bit nervous. However, if we didn't have power, we would never be in a place of advancement or development that we find ourselves in today, in the positive sense. So somebody who we all love comes out of jail in 1990 and says, I will be the president of South Africa. And people say, oh, megalomaniac. But why did he want that power? He wanted that power to change society and to create history. So Madiba was able to recognize the power in such a way that he held onto it lightly. And he said, I'm going to be here for one term, and he let go of it. Not like Frodo, who had the power and had to have his finger cut off by Gollum, you know, if you follow Tolkien, because he couldn't let go of the power, which is a wonderful analogy of so many people. When they taste the power, it just becomes a lustful thing, and they hang on to it. So how many presidents, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, have promised that they will only do one term of office? And then they make themselves available for another.
You know, your example about Madiba for me is very relevant because, I mean, that power could have been abused to the point of civil war in this country. And I've said it before, yes. And I'll say it again. I think that we should every day say, thank goodness the man said, we will discuss, we will negotiate, yes. We'll talk, we'll forgive.
Yes.
Instead of coming out there holding the fist high and saying, we want revenge.
Yes.
Now, that's also power, but that would be critically bad. But it would have been a major issue for the country.
Absolutely. Now, we are all very thankful and grateful that he had the kind of core that he did to keep this thing, you know, working. By contrast, we could have ended up with somebody whose power could have shifted, like a Mugabe, who seemed to be a very good leader until about 95 or something. Something happened. And then just has been a downward trend since then in terms of his leadership track and legacy.
And the maintenance of cost of power at all costs.
Oh, yes. And then it's not power for the future, but it's power for the past.
Yeah.
Now, the key thing about power, just one last thing on the power thing, is that to... And it goes back to the vision thing as well. There's a hook in over here. To lead, you've got to bring about change. To have any kind of change, you need power. If I came into your studio and we decided, man, we want to move the chairs around or whatever it is, we would need physical power to change our physical world. In the same way, a leader needs social power to change the social world. Mm. And that's where the power has to be. You cannot bring about change, but that you have some power or influence to bring about that change, be it in the minds of people or in the physical world.
Okay, last two, we've got consistency and integrity.
Yeah.
Lacking, severely lacking at so many levels in so many organizations and governments.
Yeah. Yes, I like the way you made that plural, very politically correct, I suppose. So, yes, a lot of people just are not consistent. They promise one thing and they deliver something that serves their own interests as opposed to those people who would have put them in power to start with.
And with integrity goes honesty.
Well,
and
yes,
trust.
Yes and no. It's more the trust thing than the honesty thing. A lot of people misunderstand integrity and they think it's equals morality, but it doesn't. It comes from the Latin, integer. You'll remember from your arithmetic what an integer was. No fraction taken away, no fraction added to it. It's a whole number. And so that is the root word for integrity. It's also the root word for integrate. So you don't talk about an integrous person. You talk about an integrated person. Mm. That's a person who is whole. So their belief system is reflected in their actions. Otherwise, they're a hypocrite. So, you know, people turn around and say, okay, so you look at those big imperatives that I say, what about Hitler? He didn't have integrity, but he in fact did. Because as evil as he was, his belief system got manifest in his behavior system. And that's what people want to see if they're going to follow anybody. If I'm going to follow you, I've got to trust you. That which you are saying is really what you believe. And if you really believe it, you're going to put your life on the line for that belief system. Now I will follow you.
Now here's the question. Was Hitler then a good leader?
No. Good in the sense of good.
Was he? He was a very effective leader.
Yeah, he was he was a big leader.
Yes.
And it's not that he was, if you look back at the history books, he wasn't just the leader of the idiots. He was the leader of some of the great intelligentsia of the Central Europe at that time,
right.
And even not and further beyond. But he was a big leader. Some would say great, but he was evil, and he was morally bankrupt, and he really messed things up, and you know, responsible for 20 million people, you know, dying or more. Mm. Horrendous. But there's no doubt about it that he was a leader. People died for him voluntarily. The ultimate sacrifice for a leader.
Can you imagine if that energy had been focused to something that would have changed the planet positively?
Yes.
I mean, it did in some way, you know, bring the people out of Europe, give them jobs and what have you. But I mean, the end result was
that was a default kind of a thing. There was no intention, I don't think. Well, I struggle in seeing the positive intention.
All right, and then finally, self-management, social management. Yeah. Does that include self-discipline?
Absolutely. That's one of the foundations of self-management. Let's take another example, like a Bill Clinton. What does everybody remember Bill Clinton for?
The blue dress.
You see, now he has a problem. But he had great vision. He had great passion, maybe too much. He had terrific communication skills. And he had vision, passion, communication. He had awesome power. He had some issues with his consistency, and his self-management was really a bit decrepit. Mm. And that caused his downfall. So if you see these six imperatives as foundationals, you know, foundations for any house of leadership you're going to buy, where your foundation is weak, that's where the crack is going to form. So you need to be actually putting in these strong foundations, vision, passion, communication, power, integrity, self-management, to build a substantial structure of leadership that the world can then see.
Final question, Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Knight in shining armor. What are we going to do? We can. Yes, we can. And yes, we will. And all those good things. Uh-huh. First term, first year, rah-rah. But it pretty soon wore off. And I think now in his second term now, it wasn't a landslide at all. And there are a lot of people who are very peeved by the fact that he's got a second term. So is he going to go out on the history books as being another great leader? Or is he kind of not going to be as successful as one originally thought as being this guy who is arriving to change the planet?
You know, I've spoken to a number of people who are much closer to the situation than I am for their analysis on it. And in some instances, it's a little bit still too early to tell, because the second term is the legacy term. The first term, he had to come to terms with Washington. He was moderated by the bureaucracy. There's no doubt about it. He was slapped into place by, you know, a non-compliant Congress and Senate and a bunch of other bureaucrats who didn't want to play his game. So then he had to start playing all sorts of games to make sure that his power could still achieve a modicum of what he set out to do. Mm. Now he doesn't really care, because he can't go for another term. Mm. We're going to see what he does now. So, you know, we need great leaders, no matter who it is, no matter what you think. Great leaders are in desperate need all over the world. And if he can come up with something that really makes the big difference and says, okay, he has changed the world and we are now 10 years ahead as opposed to 10 years back, where some of his predecessors might have taken us, that would be a good thing and we would all be happy.
History will be the judge.
Yes.
Dr. Mark Manley, thank you so much for your time. Fascinating discussion. The book is called The Leadership, and it is available.
Oh, all big leading bookstores like Exclusive and Estoril in Joburg, etc. And I know there's been some problems where the stock has run out in some of the Exclusives. Mm-hmm. It is. If you just speak to the manager, I've been told, and tell them that it's Wild Dog is distributing it, they just need to get some more stock from.
The book is called The Leadership. The author is Dr. Mark Manley, my guest this afternoon. Thank you, Mark. It's been a fascinating and good luck with the book. I hope it flies.
Thank you.
Thank you.